and let's cover the answers for exam one. So first theory problem first. It was a two-parter. You were told that both aldehydes and ketones can react with either lithium aluminum hydride or sodium borohydride in a reduction reaction. You're told that generally aldehydes are more reactive than ketones, and regardless of which one you're reducing, the lithium aluminum hydride is more reactive than the sodium borohydride. So let me, the two questions are, why is it the aldehydes are more reactive than ketones, and why is it the lithium aluminum hydride is more reactive than sodium borohydride? And let me address those in reverse order. In the case of which of the two reagents is more reactive, that would have to do with electronegativity. So boron is less electronegative than hydrogen, but aluminum is even less electronegative than that because aluminum is below boron on the periodic table. Now, you didn't have periodic tables to look at during the exam, so if you didn't mention that it was specifically below boron, that's okay. But you would want to say that aluminum is less electronegative than boron even, which means whatever electronegativity difference you have between boron and hydrogen is not as great as the electronegativity difference between aluminum and hydrogen. So given the larger electronegativity difference, that's why the hydrogen in lithium aluminum hydride has a greater activity, because it's as if it was more of an ionic compound. Now, why is it that the aldehyde is more reactive than a ketone? Well, that has to do with hyperconjugation. Hyperconjugation is the one-word answer to that part of the question. You are asked to draw some kind of appropriate diagram in connection with that question, which those of you who are returning students, the first thing you probably thought of was a SMOG, which for the new students, that's structural molecular orbital graph, which is a depiction of the different types of orbitals present. It is not a drawing trying to show phase of the orbitals. So when we pick MO theory up again later this quarter, we're not going to be drawing just SMOG diagrams. We're going to be drawing molecular orbital diagrams where we do show phase. But for this question, you needed to show just that there's some form of orbital interaction. And these SMOG diagrams are where you show what things are sp2, which things are sp3, what's p, what's sigma bond, what's pi bond. You didn't even have to draw a full diagram. You just needed to show one of two key types of interactions that do or don't happen. And what we could do is look at a molecule like ethanol. Ethanol has a pi bond in it. So again, notice that I'm color coding as to type of orbital, not the sign of the wave function. We have a methyl group and we've got a hydrogen attached to the carbonyl. Because of type. Oh no. That methyl group is going to have sp3 hybridization. One of those sp3 hybrids is actually going to be part of the sigma bond that I have being drawn back towards the carbonyl. And then we'll have three more of these sp3 hybrids. Each one in this case has a hydrogen. Now, I don't believe I showed any particular molecule, so there wasn't a specific one you had to draw. But I'm going to show you the two kinds of comments you could have made, one or the other you needed to make, which is if you focus on the fact that this is an aldehyde, the fact that you have a hydrogen there, that hydrogen is at a 90-degree angle to the pi bond. If you're at a 90-degree angle, you've got no orbital overlap. So there's the lack of donation of electron density from that side of the molecule into the carbonyl. That's versus what we have on the other side. On the side that does have an alkyl group, You know, it doesn't really matter that it's hydrogens attached to that carbon. It's the fact that you have sigma bonds there, and that those sigma bonds can overlap with the pi bond, providing some electron density to the pi bond, lowering the energy. But if you're lowering the energy, you make it less reactive. You're stabilizing it. So it wouldn't need to as much react. So when you have hydrogens, less of that hyperconjugation overlap, less stabilization, more reactivity. When you have the alkyl groups, you know, there is another argument you can make as well, which is sterics. Put two alkyl groups on either side, and you've got a bit more steric hindrance, although do recall that a carbonyl is a planar system. Besides sterics, though, we have this electronic effect, that each of the alkyl groups can, if you had a ketone, that on either side, each of those alkyl groups has the potential to have hyperconjugation, which stabilizes and makes less reactive the carbonyl bond. Questions on that first of the theoretical problems? Well, then let's jump to the fourth problem, which was the second of the theoretical problems, which had to do with PCC. So you had two different alcohols that were discussed in that problem, one of which was butane-1-ol, which you're told that if it reacts with PCC under anhydrous conditions, that you'll end up with an aldehyde, butane-al. But if water was present, that oxidation would continue until you end up with the carboxylic acid. If you did the same type of process with butane-2-ol instead, now I know many of you may not be able to read that symbol, but in computer terminology, an exclamation point means not. So what I'm trying to say is here, if you have PCC with water or without water, then it doesn't matter which condition you have, you're only going to end up with the secondary alcohol. And so the question was, why is there this difference of reactivity with a primary alcohol, whether or not you have water, versus for the secondary alcohol, there is no difference if you have water or not. You did not have to write a full mechanism. In fact, very little of the mechanism you need to show. There's only one key point where this difference in reactivity stems from, and that's what you needed to focus on. So for primary alcohol, the reason that you have overoxidation is because in the presence of water, you can form a hydrate. But even beyond the fact that you have a hydrate, it's the fact that you have a removable hydrogen that's attached to the same position as the two alcohol groups. Because a little further into the mechanism, we'll have the chromate ester which is going to get eliminated by water or some other base in solution. If we didn't have that removable hydrogen, that elimination would not be possible. We wouldn't be able to oxidize further. So I could say simply that oxidation is possible due to the removable hydrogen. In the case of the secondary alcohol, once we oxidize to the ketone, we can also form a hydrate. But, and I think these are the same types of things I must have pointed out in the class notes, there's no hydrogen there. And on top of that, There's already four bonds to carbon, so we can't make another one. So really, the key mechanistic intermediate that I referred to in the problem is this removal of hydrogen. And if that can't happen, oxidation can't occur. So for primary alcohols, it happens because one, you form the hydrate, but two, elimination can occur. For secondary alcohols, even if you form a hydrate, nothing else can happen. Questions on that problem? Let's move to mechanism next. So of your sections, the first mechanism problem was the pinnacle rearrangement. It had a symmetric starting material, so it didn't matter which one of the alcohols you showed react first, but one or the other will get protonated. For the purposes of this exam, I'm going to follow what I had said in lecture, which is this, that if the overall reaction I'm showing as being irreversible, then I'm allowing you to show the individual steps as irreversible. I want to point out, though, that I broke that rule today in lecture when I showed you the Wolff-Kishner reaction, because, in fact, it is key that every bit of the Wolff-Kishner reaction is reversible until nitrogen comes off. And only because of that is the reaction not really truly reversible. For this process, though, the pinnacle rearrangement, the reason I'm making this statement is because technically any protonation or deprotonation is an equilibrium process. So every time you show H plus coming on or hopping off, technically you should be using reversible arrows. But I'm not, because I'm following what I'd said originally, that if the overall process is not reversible, I'm choosing not to show each individual step as reversible. If you did show it as reversible, you're right, and you didn't get points marked off. But if you showed it with a forward arrow like this, even if you didn't think about it, I'm still saying I'll count this as correct as well. We end up with water, which is a leaving group, so it comes off. And had you not seen this reaction before, you might not expect this next step, because we already have a tertiary carbocation, which rearranges to form a secondary. You might think, wait, tertiaries are more stable than secondaries. Yes, they are. But this is not a normal secondary carbocation. It's a secondary carbocation that has an oxygen right next door to it. That oxygen allows for instant delocalization of the lone pair once the carbocation ends up next to it. And so even though it's secondary, it's far more favorable, which is the only reason it would happen in the first place. Once we have that delocalization, we show deprotonation occurring. To make the ketone, which that is the product. Questions about that mechanism? All right, then the second mechanism, let's see, what was that? That was, oh yes, the three-parter. All right. So we had a chiral alkyl halide reacting first with sodium hydroxide, second with a chiral epoxide, and third, sodium hydride. So that sodium hydride part, that's an easy part of the mechanism, but I bet you the answer is going to annoy some of you. Because I know some of you are sitting there thinking, okay, he's trying to do a trick problem, because he's shown this sodium hydride doing an intramolecular SN2 before. So there must be something more going on there. And as you find out, no, there's not. But let's build up to that. First step, reaction of the alkyl halide with sodium hydroxide. That's classic SN2. It's a simultaneous attack of the nucleophile and the loss of the leaving group with inversion of stereochemistry. Got to make sure that you inverted that deuterium. The second step involves a sort of side reaction first, because in acid, the epoxide is going to get protonated. And so I'm going to need to show the epoxide getting protonated before I show this alcohol reacting with it. So it's like I'm going to break the flow of this mechanism just for a moment, because I need to show that preliminary step. So separately, we have the epoxide. Oh, I said it out loud correctly, but I wrote the halide again, didn't I? Better? It's like, no, I had to have got that part right, Dr. Gray. All right, protonation occurs. We form the cyclooxonium ion, which is just like the cyclobromonium and cyclomercurinium ions, in that one of the two bonds is longer and weaker, and it's the bond to the tertiary position that's that longer, weaker bond. The alcohol is now able to attack, because by protonating the epoxide, we've activated it. It's going to attack at the less substituted position, which is consistent with this being cationic ring opening. This had an unintentionally complicated product to draw that some of you might not even realize there's an issue going on here. So by drawing this, you go, oh crap. Realize this is going to be maybe as small as half a point off if you did what I'm about to show you. One, we're going to have inversion of configuration at where that epoxide ring opens. That you've got to show. And notice how we effectively lose stereochemistry. Because of height. At the other place, stop that. Where the teacher did that to me once, and it worked. I never sneezed again. What was I saying? Oh, yes, we lose configuration of that other position. But here's the thing. If you draw the two carbons of that alcohol the way I have, yes, you're going to write the deuterium with a dash the way that I just did. But if you weren't paying attention, and just in your haste, you accidentally wrote the opposite way. Well, then you'd have to write a wedge for it. Because it would have been as if you flipped it on paper 180 degrees around. So it's not that we got two different compounds, but there are two different ways to represent it. And just to make sure, let's look at this. Is this R or S? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. R? Okay, let's see. S? You got a 50-50 chance, don't you? Oxygen, more important than carbon, more important than deuterium. Oxygen, carbon, deuterium. It looks like it's clockwise, but which way is the hydrogen pointing? It's pointing at us, so we reverse whatever we see. So it's really counterclockwise, so it's really S. Now what about down here? Did I draw this one correctly? Oxygen, carbon, deuterium. Going to the right, but the hydrogen's pointed toward us, so that really is still S. What about over here, where now I'm using the wedge? Oxygen, carbon, deuterium. It's counterclockwise, and the hydrogen is pointing in the back the way it's supposed to be. So yes, that's also correctly drawn. This is just going to be an example to all of us in the future that when you've got multiple stereo centers, you've got to be careful. Again, though, I even didn't really mean for it to be that bad, that nasty to draw. So I won't ignore whether it's wrong, but it's going to be a minimal number of points if you accidentally drew it incorrectly. Because you hadn't seen a problem like that in class, where you had to watch how were you drawing the substituents. The point. So what? Both are correct. But what I was saying is, you might have drawn two carbons like that, and then put your dash there, thinking that you were copying what's written up above. But realize that because the oxygen is really in the opposite side of the paper, it's as if you had flipped this whole thing upside down on paper, which is why you had to use the wedge there. Both of those are the same. I'm going to continue with just with the first one. Deprotonate it. And then the last step, sodium hydride deprotonates. And this is the part that's going to annoy some of you. After the deprotonation, nothing happens. There are no leaving groups. So there's no reason that alkoxide is going to react. This is just the reagent to make an alkoxide. So if you showed something further, I don't know what that'll be in terms of points, but nothing else is going to happen. That's, with the sodium there, the product. So questions about that mechanism? Yes? I didn't draw it just now. That's the mistake I had made. You know, I wrote up the test, I looked at it, I thought, no, the acid's separate, because I was thinking I was doing a different problem than I really was. And that's why when Yun, I think it was, asked during the exam, well, where's the H+, I realized I put it in the wrong place. So that's why I moved the H+ back a step and rewrote in the sodium hydride.
But then, I thought it was based on what it was substituted.
No, if there's H+, it's the cationic mechanism. Yeah. Anytime you got H+, it's automatically the cationic one. Other questions? Yeah.
What is the source of hydride?
What is the source of hydride? The sodium hydride, step 3. Other questions? All right, let's do the fill-in-the-blank problems next. I'm just going to go one to the next, but stop me if and when you've got questions. So first one, is another epoxide problem. And this one is anionic ring opening conditions because we have an alkoxide. So alkoxides attack at the less substituted position, which we're going to lose stereochemistry, so I'll write it with a plain bond. The side that did not get attacked does not change stereochemistry. So the oxygen is still written with a dash. And because there's no H+ shown, again, nothing further happens, and so the product is an alkoxide. If you put a hydrogen on there, it'll only be a tiny number of points off, but you created reagents that weren't shown. So you can't write OH because there's no acid in this case. The next one, it looks complicated. because you have this cyclic alkyl tosylate that reacts with something. Oh, that's right. I got to show which one's the answer. Reacts with something in order to make an ether. Well, what kind of substrate did we start with? A primary tosylate. So what kind of reaction probably occurred here? Well, primaries can't do SN1, so the only thing it could have done is SN2. For an SN2 reaction, sorry everyone, one second. Oh, I might have said tosylate. I'm sorry. It is a mesylate because you only have the methyl group there. So yes, but it's a sulfonate, so it works the same way. So this is a primary alkyl mesylate. It's still, therefore, going to be an SN2 reaction, which means we need a strong basic nucleophile. And so the answer is going to be... that. Because if you had an alcohol is not strong enough reagent to do an SN2 reaction. You do need an alkoxide in order to do an SN2. This is nothing more, in fact, than the Williamson ether synthesis. So it might look a little strange because I've only shown you half of it. I only showed you the substrate. But I was expecting or hoping that you'd notice, oh, okay, something making an ether, that's the Williamson ether synthesis. Now, if you showed the alcohol, you'll get partial credit because you had the exact right idea. It's just alcohols aren't strong enough to do this kind of reaction. Now, questions on any of the ones we've done so far? All right, then moving to the next one. One of the easier reactions. An alcohol reacting with something in order to make an alkoxide, in this case, the sodium alkoxide. There are two right answers there. Either sodium metal itself or sodium hydride. Either one would have been acceptable. Next one, probably the toughest of them. Something reacting with lithium aluminum deuteride followed by deuterated sulfuric acid to create this doubly deuterated alcohol. The reason this was the trickiest one is you had to recognize that the deuterium that's attached to a carbon is a different carbon than the one that the alcohol is attached to. The reason that's important is because if you had an aldehyde or a ketone that you reduced, then wherever that attack occurs, that's the same carbon as the alcohol ends up at. Well, sorry.
It's still there.
Well, I was worried the dean might have picked up my lunch thinking it was garbage. So. Anyways. So, for an aldehyde or a ketone, if the reduction occurred, the deuterium is going to end up in the same place as the alcohol. This is obviously not the same place, and so the answer is an epoxide. Because if you have an epoxide, and if you're opening under basic conditions, well, the attack occurs at the less substituted position. So if we drew this ring, the less substituted position, that's where the deuterium would go. Whichever part of the ring gets pushed open, or which part does not undergo inversion. So that stereocenter does not invert. So that is, in fact, the answer, that particular epoxide. Like I said, I'm already acknowledging that's probably the toughest one for you all. The next one. Kind of an interesting problem. Type of problem my old O-Chem instructor liked to ask. I was commenting to the morning section, this problem feels a lot like the multiple choice questions that McCulley gives on his biology exam, where it could be A or B or C or A and B or C and A and B or B or C or A, or you know, all his combos. All of above, none of the above, some of the above. You have this molecule with three different alcohols that reacts with PCC, with excess PCC, and without water. You also have pyridine present. So, what happens? Well, with a primary alcohol under anhydrous conditions, you oxidize up to the aldehyde. For a secondary, it doesn't matter what it is, it oxidizes to the ketone. And for a tertiary, nothing happens. Although, someone from the morning session said, wait, what if we've made the chromate ester with that tertiary alcohol but did not show the elimination? Well, technically correct. It could make the chromate ester as long as you didn't show the elimination. So if you had that, that's an acceptable alternate answer. But otherwise, this is the one I was looking for. Primary goes to aldehyde, secondary goes to ketone, tertiary does nothing. All right, next one. It's two more, and then we'll get to the synthesis problems you're waiting to hear about. Or maybe not. Aldehyde reacting with something in order to make an alcohol where it's not the alcohol that's deuterated, it's the position that's right at where the alcohol is. Well, this is one of those cases where we have a carbonyl, which we know that because you can't have an epoxide because there's only one carbon off the ring. So, you see that it's a carbonyl. What's going to be the reducing agent? Well, it's a deuterium that ended up where the carbonyl used to be. And so that means that it's sodium borodeuteride or lithium aluminum deuteride, followed by non-deuterium acid workup. So if the D was on the oxygen, then the D would be in step two. Since the D is on the carbon, it's part of step one. Then the last one, another one of the easier problems. Something reacting with PBr3 in order to make the alkyl haline. Well, it's an alcohol that does it. It happens with inversion. And so we started with that alcohol. I'm just realizing I accidentally skipped over a problem, one of the other easy ones, so let me come back to that. And that was kind of going the opposite direction, where you're given the alcohol and the reagent, and you have to show what you make. It's a chiral alcohol that's shown reacting with thionyl chloride that makes a chloride with inversion of configuration. Questions on any of the fill-in-the-blank problems? In several of these, there'll be some form of partial credit, particularly like that one where it's the SN2. If you had the alcohol instead of an alkoxide, you knew what you were supposed to be doing. You just made a mistake in terms of nucleophile strength. So it wasn't like you were totally wrong.
What about like one third, where there's two or one answer?
If you forgot an H plus or something like that, or if there's two right answers, you only have to show one.
Oh.
Yeah, no, if it's a situation where there are multiple possible answers, you only have to have one right one. In this one, you have to show the H+. If you forgot that, I don't know if that's going to be a point or two, but it's no more than that. All right, let's do the two synthesis problems, which the first one is somewhat like something we did as part of the review problems, where specifically you needed to make a new carbon-carbon bond with an alkyne. If you carefully looked at the products versus reactants, you'll notice that there's the same total number of carbons between the products and reactants. So it is alkylation of an alkyne, something that we had at least twice in the problems that we covered. And so I was hoping that you might be able to remember that technique where we're going to deprotonate the alkyne. Of course, in order to do this reaction, you need to have a leaving group. So you needed to turn the aldehyde into something that could be attacked by the alkyne. Well, hopefully one of the other things that you remembered is that alcohols usually make a good intermediate for synthesis reactions. So we need a leaving group. Do we know how to turn an alcohol into a leaving group? Sure. Do we know how to turn this aldehyde into an alcohol? Yes, we do. And so that's what we could start with. Since sodium borohydride works with aldehydes and it's easier to handle than lithium aluminum hydride, I'm going to use sodium borohydride, although it would have been correct if you showed a lithium aluminum hydride. That'll get us the alcohol. And then because it's a primary alcohol, we could have used whatever reagent we wanted to convert it into a leaving group. Tosylates are good, bromides are good. I haven't used tosyl chloride yet, so I'll use it here. We're ready to do an SN2 reaction. And notice, by the way, that the choice of substrate that I made next to the primary carbon next to the leaving group is a quaternary carbon, one that has four carbons attached, no hydrogens. So elimination is not possible. The only thing that can happen in this case is an SN2 reaction. Now we need the nucleophile, which comes from deprotonating the alkyne. Last quarter, it was sodium amide that I had showed as being used for deprotonation. The question came up, and ever did address it, as to whether sodium hydride is basic enough. Because I never looked it up, because it's logical, if you use sodium hydride, I'm going to accept it. I still need to look up and see if it works, but for the exam, I'm going to accept it. Sodium amide is what I was looking for. One way or another, if you get to that acetylide salt, then there's an SN2 reaction that occurs, and you get the product. Yes?
Can we use the sodium borohydride to make the acetylide? Or lithium aluminum hydride?
I'm guessing yes. I'm going to need to look that one up. Other questions on this synthesis? Then the second synthesis was inspired by another type of problem where we did that involved two carbons, each of which had or has a functional group on it. So I've moved functional group positions. And in problems that involve two different positions like that, I had suggested that an intermediate in those kinds of reactions is usually an alkene, an alkyne, or an epoxide. Well, again, there's this idea that maybe an alcohol is a useful intermediate. Do we know how to turn an alcohol into a ketone? Well, of course. Do we know how to get an alcohol to move positions like that? Well, not directly. But we know how to make an alcohol from an alkene, and we can make an alkene out of the starting material, can't we? In fact, yes, because there's only one type of elimination possible with that starting material. Only one way the double bond can form. If I use a bulky hindered base like that, I'm going to ensure elimination versus substitution. From there, I can make the alcohol, and this is the only part of a reaction that's kind of a gotcha, only part of the synthesis. Because if you try to just do plain old hydration, well, you're going to end up with carbocation rearrangement. So you can't do plain hydration. It's got to be oxymercuration, demercuration, followed by, well, no, that is the demercuration, this part. So oxymercuration, demercuration gets us to the alcohol with which, no matter how you oxidize it, PCC or chromium trioxide, the only thing you could make is the ketone. Questions on that synthesis? Why? Why did I give you that one? Because it'll be an instructional tool. You will learn from it. Now, what do you need to finish off today? Well, obviously, reaction 3. A few notes, because I was getting a whole lot of the same question from section 1, which is, I've got this solid. What do I do with it? Realize, by the way, that when you come up and ask me a question like that, I'm going to ask you what lab, what step, what reagents are you using, because I don't know what you just did. So when you come up and say, what's this? I say, I don't know. You tell me. So you come up with me to me, and you've got solids in there. And you think, I can't get it to dissolve in either of my two layers. Okay, well, think about that. What are you trying to accomplish after you've done the synthesis? A series of washes, right? And your product is most definitely going to be organic soluble. These still beans are organic soluble compounds.
So if you have some solid that refuses to dissolve, you've got two possibilities. Either you don't have enough solvent, or you don't have the right solvent. So if you've already added methylene chloride, which, yes, it's the same thing as dichloromethane. If you've added enough of that and you can't get your solid to dissolve, well, then it's not the methylene chloride that's the problem. You need to add more of your aqueous layer, whatever that might happen to be in whichever particular wash that you're doing. Now, if it's the situation when you barely finished the reaction, threw everything into your drawer, and you haven't done any washes yet, then if you come up and say, I've got the solid, I would say, great. Add the solvents and continue. Just because solids form doesn't mean something's gone wrong. Just think through what is it that physically you need to accomplish from that point. If you got a solid, again, you're adding your solvent, the methylene chloride, it should dissolve. If it doesn't, then the only other thing that might get it to dissolve is water, one of your aqueous reagents. Now, I'll also say, though, that I'm guessing this solid that people are having difficulty with is very likely the triphenylphosphine oxide, the byproduct of the Wittig reaction. And although it says to add water and do that wash first before the bisulfite, if you add bisulfite, you might reduce away some of that triphenylphosphine oxide. It might make some of those solids disappear. So the first reaction, first response you have to the solid shouldn't be heated up or panic or filter. It's just try to make your separations occur. Now, as far as the Grignard reaction, we talked about, or those of you who are not in lecture today, yes, I'm recording lectures. Yes, they will eventually get posted online. But there are going to be occasions like today where I might say something in lecture that you kind of needed to hear for the lab today. So if you weren't in lecture today, get the notes from your classmates right away as far as Grignard reactions, but here's what you need to do. You need to go and read the first part of the procedure for the Grignard reaction, because it tells you there's a specific list of glassware that you need to clean and put in the oven before you leave today and leave it overnight in the oven. That's so we can avoid the water, which is one of those things that kills off a Grignard reagent. There's a wax pencil up here that you can use to put your name on the glassware. If you clean it, don't rinse with acetone, or don't rinse with acetone as the last thing that you use. Yeah, it should evaporate off being in the oven for that long, but if you just think about it, acetone is a ketone. Grignard reagents react with ketones, so why would you wash your flask with something that could potentially react with what you're trying to make? Yes, water could do the same thing, but that's why we're putting it in the oven for so long. So if you wash with acetone to get any organics out, make your last wash water, and then put it into the oven. Aside from getting that glassware prepared, you need to try to finish up as much as possible with Lab 3. If you are one of the very few people that somehow didn't finish Lab 1, hopefully you already emailed me alerting me to the fact that you, and you probably already talked to me last week, in fact, and told me, hey, I still need to do an IR. Get that IR done today, and then for you, the lab report will be due on Wednesday. For everybody else, make sure you get through your Lab 2 IR. If you get to the end and you're running out of time and you've got your reaction 3 at least at a point where you could leave it, but maybe you haven't done the IR yet, no problem. Turn and finish up Lab 2. Because I'm expecting that next time after you get your Grignard reactions under control that you'll have some time to finish up, wrap up with Experiment 3.